Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. When we think of the lives taken by the deadly synthetic opioid fentanyl, we think of overdoses that come with fentanyl-laced heroin or pills. But listen to what happened to Lisa Bennett's 32-year-old son, Chris.
He was smoking cocaine that was laced. That's what he had in his system, was cocaine and fentanyl.
Cocaine-laced fentanyl, not heroin. Which means there are new groups of people like Chris suffering from addiction who are now falling prey to fentanyl overdoses. Fentanyl and its related compounds killed an estimated 25,000 people in 2017, more than any other drug in America. And it shows no signs of slowing down. Here's Justin Herdman, U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Ohio.
It's actually such a problem that I've stopped talking about there being an opioid crisis, and I speak more generally about there being a narcotics overdose crisis. What is really driving our death rate up is fentanyl.
This hour on Point, fentanyl's growing deadly reach. You can join us on air or online. Has the fentanyl scourge touched you or your family? Were they taking drugs we don't usually associate with the opioid abuse crisis? And if we have a much broader narcotics overdose crisis now, how do we stop it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from San Francisco is Julia Lurie, reporter at Mother Jones. She covers the opioid epidemic. We have a link to her piece. It's headlined, America's Fentanyl Problem is Reaching a Whole New Group of Users. That link is at onpointradio.org. Julia, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me, Meghna.
So first of all, I mean, just start off by giving us some of the basics here. When did we first start seeing fentanyl contaminating or even being deliberately added to non-opioid drugs in America?
So it appears to be a pretty recent trend. As you said, what we think about when we think about fentanyl these days is fentanyl lacing heroin predominantly. But more and more anecdotally, I had heard that people were dying from fentanyl-laced cocaine. And that got me thinking, you know, how often is this happening? And do we have numbers on this?
Mm-hmm. And do we have numbers on this?
We have some numbers on this. So I called around to a number of medical examiners' offices to see how often people were dying from mixtures of drugs, including fentanyl and cocaine. And what's tricky is that in a lot of places, they don't track the exact mixtures of drugs that killed a given person. So in a few places, though, they do track those specifics, and I was able to get that data. So the places that I got data for were Connecticut, Rhode Island, Cuyahoga County, which includes Cleveland, and New York City. Mm-hmm. And what I was looking for were overdoses involving cocaine and fentanyl without heroin. And the reason I excluded heroin was because I wanted to exclude potential deaths where someone used cocaine separately from fentanyl-laced heroin.
Right.
And I also wanted to exclude speedballs, which are when someone uses heroin and cocaine together. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I got data from those four places, and those four places saw a pretty dramatic increase across the board in deaths from mixtures of cocaine and fentanyl without heroin. To different degrees. All four places saw increases. In Cuyahoga County, again, which includes Cleveland, it was a particularly dramatic rise. These deaths made up about a quarter of all overdoses last year and in 2016.
A quarter?
Yeah, which, you know, was huge news to me because, again, we think about the drug epidemic as being an opioid epidemic. And as you said, if fentanyl is in the cocaine supply, even at relatively small rates, it's reaching a new group of people. And what's notable about that is, you know, when you use opioids, you build up a tolerance. And so for regular heroin users and regular fentanyl users, you are able to take a lot more fentanyl without overdosing. But for someone who's not used to taking opioids and someone who is normally a cocaine user or a recreational cocaine user, with no exposure to fentanyl, just a tiny amount of fentanyl could be lethal.
Mm. Now, I'm seeing from your reporting that, I mean, in Cuyahoga County, again, that not just the number of overdose deaths due to fentanyl-laced cocaine has gone up, but even law enforcement seizures of cocaine-fentanyl mixes. In your story, you report that those seizures increased 43-fold between 2015 and 2017. So, I mean, is there a way for us to know how much of this fentanyl-laced cocaine, or I'm even seeing some stories saying methamphetamine, how much of it is actually out there?
It's really hard to tell at this point, to be honest, because what we have data on is overdoses. And like I said, even our data on overdoses isn't particularly detailed in most places. And then we have data on drug seizures, and that's, local and not necessarily, again, always particularly available. So in the places, though, where we do have data on drug seizures, like Cuyahoga, like New England, you are seeing a lot more cocaine-fentanyl mixtures. Mm. And what that indicates, at least to me, is that you are having these drugs mixed in the drug supply before they're snorted,
right,
or injected or whatever.
So in a minute, Julia, I want to talk to you more about that, about why it's ending up, why fentanyl is ending up in these other drug supplies as well. But can you hang on for just a second? Because joining us right now on the line is Hugh Shannon. He is with the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office, and he sees the office and its regional forensic science laboratory. And we've been talking a lot about Cuyahoga County. So Hugh Shannon, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magna. Thank you.
So Julia got us started about how much of a change and a rise you've seen there in the county in terms of fentanyl-laced cocaine. I mean, tell us a little bit more. How dramatic is this shift?
It's fairly dramatic. We, at Cuyahoga County, we're fortunate. We've got the medical examiner's office and the regional forensic lab all under one roof, under one director. So we're able to collect and share information pretty seamlessly. So that's very helpful, especially some of the things that you and Julia have been talking about. So we've seen a lot of these mixtures of coke and fentanyl together, both in the toxicology reports from the fatalities, as well as what we're finding in the laboratory.
Mm. Now, so if I understand correctly, I'm just trying to get a sense as to really how large this new problem regarding fentanyl is, because I'm seeing here that for Cuyahoga County, that if you remove fentanyl from the equation, that when you just talk about deaths due to cocaine, that hasn't really changed.
No, it's been fairly stable between 100 and 125 fatalities a year. And again, these charts are, you have to take it with a grain of salt, because we've got cause of death, which will indicate what drugs actually led to a person's death. But we also have, you know, the background toxicology reports, which may have other substances, and just because they weren't attributable to the actual death may not be in that cause of death. So these are strictly from what comes on the death certificate as the cause of death.
Yeah.
it's important to note that, because it may be more widespread, these drugs, but we're only capturing what is in the death certificate.
Yeah. But when you, so just to be clear, when you take into account cocaine and fentanyl mixtures in Cuyahoga County, you've seen, mm-hmm, what, a doubling of the number of overdose deaths?
So the number of deaths from the mixture that we're seeing, in 2015, I think it was about 25. And when 2016 hit, and that's when fentanyl really became prevalent, it jumped to 160, and then last year to 200. So those are significant steep rises for any, for any subset of what we've seen. But every category that we have has jumped because of fentanyl. The total overdose deaths due to drugs, opioid deaths, and now the cocaine-related deaths. Huh. And it's strictly because of the fentanyl that's been introduced.
Wow. So what effect is this having on families and those suffering from drug addiction in Cuyahoga County? Because I imagine that, especially when we're talking about people who are using cocaine, methamphetamine, I mean, they're not expecting fentanyl to be in the drugs, are they?
No, for the most part, I would think not. And that will be directly shown in the fatality numbers. Longtime cocaine users, they're just not ready for what happens when opioids hit their system. And that's part of the reason why, along with a lot of kind of anecdotal stories and our results in the laboratory, why we feel that this has been done deliberately, because the cartels had looked at, their typical users and saw that they were missing a large segment. And I think that's somewhat attributable to the fact that they had had some, a little bit of a drug war going on with the old cocaine drug lords down in Central America about a decade ago.
Hugh Shannon, I'm going to just jump in here. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but we do have to take a quick break. And you're getting to an important point that I want to explore in detail after that break. We're talking about fentanyl's growing deadly reach and how we're seeing it now laced in things like cocaine and methamphetamine, and how that might be exposing a whole new group of drug-addicted users to deadly overdoses. You're hearing Hugh Shannon. He's with the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office, and I'm also joined by Julia Lurie. She's a reporter at Mother Jones who covers the opioid epidemic. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Ever listen to the news and wonder, is there anything good happening out there? I'm Mindy Thomas from NPR's Wow in the World. And each week, Guy Raz and I take you and your kids on wild adventures to explore the most wow-worthy news stories on the planet. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about how the spread of fentanyl may be transforming the opioid crisis into a narcotics overdose crisis. That's the view from one U.S. attorney in Ohio. And I'm wondering what your experiences are, if you have any experiences with fentanyl or members of your family or friends. Were they taking drugs that they didn't think would have something like fentanyl in it? We're starting to see it in cocaine, in methamphetamine. What was your experience? What happened? And what can we do to stop this? I'm joined today from Cleveland, Ohio, by Hugh Shannon. He's with the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office. And from San Francisco by Julia Lurie. She's a reporter at Mother Jones. She covers the opioid epidemic, and she's been writing about this. She has a piece titled, America's Fentanyl Problem is Reaching a Whole New Group of Users. Julia, just before the break, Hugh was getting to us to a really, what is kind of the central question here is, why are we seeing fentanyl now mixed in with things like cocaine and meth? I suppose this is a huge problem, so we can't really reduce it to one answer. But is it deliberate or not?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Generally speaking, explanations for this sort of fall into two camps. So one group of people is saying, look, drug use is up overall. There is more cocaine in circulation. There's more fentanyl in circulation. There are white powders. There's going to be some natural contamination. And then there are people like Hugh and like many others saying, no, contamination just by itself doesn't really explain this. The scope of this trend is, you know, it like in Cleveland, these cocaine fentanyl deaths were a quarter of all overdose deaths last year. So that has to be some more intentional effort by cartels, by drug users to addict a new population or affect a new population. You know, what's tricky about this is that it may very well depend on the location, among other things. And like I said, we don't have great data on how prevalent this is across the board. So it's really hard to draw a concrete conclusion, certainly nationally.
Mm. Well, we have a little bit of tape here from our home station here of WBUR, because our reporter Martha Biebinger recently spoke with Raphael, a person who buys cocaine and other drugs often several times a day in Boston. And he described the recent uptick he's seen in use.
People were just using cocaine occasionally. Now they're using cocaine every day.
Because of the fentanyl.
Mm-hmm. It's all about make them need the product.
Hugh Shannon, what do you think about that? I mean, you know, I am seeing here that just one use of a drug laced with fentanyl can increase someone's susceptibility to addiction tremendously. So is this possibly being done at least by some makers of this drug intentionally?
That's our understanding. And our medical folks and toxicology folks will tell you that, yes, one use of an opioid, if your brain is wired in that direction, can addict a person. It only takes that one time. So we've got, again, the difference between this intentional and maybe accidental contamination is why I brought up at the beginning that it's important to note that these are coming from the death certificates. So there is a significant amount of a certain drug that will be attributable to the death of that person. So it's not because there happened to be some sprinkles of cocaine in the fentanyl or vice versa. There were enough amounts of each of those drugs that they would have caused that person's death. That leads to a more intentional strategy to addict a population that had not been taking opioids and who, under most circumstances, and this is, again, anecdotal, you know, interviews, that they specifically tried to stay away from heroin and opioids because they knew that it was addictive. So you take that plus our lab seeing in 2015, we had 9 cases where things that were submitted through our drug chemistry laboratory had both cocaine powder and fentanyl powder in it, to 134 in 2016 and almost 400 last year.
Wow.
So that's not accidental contamination. I'm not saying that it never happens. It's like any other business at the end of a month. They're running low on supply. The dealers will sweep into bags whatever's left to get it out so that they can get new shipments of whatever.
But. Yeah. Yeah. So, Julia Lurie, I just want to turn back to you briefly here before we get to some calls. You know, I take Hugh Shannon's point that just the sheer rise, the numbers, make it seem like a lot of this may not be accidental. And I'm not going to claim for a second that the dealers or the manufacturers of these drugs actually care about the health of the users on the other end of these transactions. But, I mean, there's a risk here, though, right? Because obviously, the risk is overdose. That you know they're putting a compound into cocaine or meth that is leading to a sharp rise in overdose deaths.
Sure, there's absolutely a risk, and at the same time, there's also a potential if you're looking at this financial only from a financial point of view for a new population, as he was saying, to be addicted to opioids. Again, it's so hard to tell, especially at a national scale, but even on a local scale, if this is, you know, intentional contamination, if this is unintentional contamination, exactly what's going on. But I do think that if you are a drug dealer and you have fentanyl, you know that you can make money. And you have, if you have drug users, regardless of if they're using heroin or cocaine or something else, fentanyl is going to be a good way to boost your profit.
Mm. Ben is calling from Concord, North Carolina. You're on the air, Ben.
Hi, Bagna. Thanks for taking my call. My my little brother passed away from a fentanyl-laced heroin overdose. I know that's not what the topic is, but my question is, why can't we take the power away from the cartels and the drug lords, legalize drugs in this country, and regulate them, and create state-run or federal-run facilities to help with treatment?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, first of all, thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry about your brother. I imagine we're going to be hearing from a lot more people who've gone through what you've gone through. Hugh Shannon, what do you have to say to Ben? I mean, lots of people are wondering if we've reached the point in this crisis where legalization and regulation is one of the only ways out.
Well, first, Ben, I'm sorry for your loss. And we deal with folks and these questions on a daily basis now. Our office does not take a position on the legalization of drugs at this point. You know, we're dealing with massive amounts of fatalities. There has been talk around the country about safe injection sites. They do it in British Columbia and over in Europe, and there has been some limited success. We haven't really seen a lot of data yet. I think Julia will tell you San Francisco is ramping up, I think, to start on this summer if it's not already up and running. I think the legalization of drugs is going to be a much larger topic and will obviously have to be dealt with at the congressional level before anything else happens.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Gail, who's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Gail.
Hi, Magna. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Gail.
Okay. Well, I have a son who is addicted to heroin and likewise fentanyl. Once that came along, he was very adept at adjusting the dosages so that he knew exactly what he was doing. He had fentanyl, and he knew he had fentanyl, and he adjusted accordingly. When those things became less available to him, he switched over to cocaine, and suddenly there was this huge attraction to the cocaine that just went on and became devastatingly dangerous. And now I understand the attraction, because I do believe that it was laced with fentanyl, and it did become an addiction for him, which cocaine is usually more easy to get off. Now, we've been doing this for 20 years, so I'm very well versed. It was just the worst he's ever been, physically, mentally, emotionally, and I understand the attraction now. So it obviously was laced, and he probably obviously knew it.
Yeah,
Gail, became the attraction.
I'm feeling a great dig. I'm a mom too, so hearing you talk about your son is making me feel very deeply concerned about him. How is he doing now?
He is in recovery right now. It was touch and go there for a while, but we got some really good help through a particular website called Allies in Recovery. I don't know if I can give them a push, but I will. And just in our behavior and how we acted towards him, kind of gave him the incentive to do what he had to do.
Well, since you have... not that any parent ever wants this much experience with this challenge, but since you have so many years of experience watching your son go through this, I mean, it was interesting to hear you say that it was when he switched over to the cocaine, it was different, that it was much more intense than you thought it would be. Like, what would you be your advice to other parents looking out now if they see a change in their child's addictive behavior?
Well, I would say the addictive behavior that you typically see with heroin and fentanyl is more like a laid back kind of relaxed, all's right with the world sort of thing until they come down, of course. But with cocaine, it's usually the opposite. You're very hyper, you're very powerful, you can do everything and anything, 50 times a minute. But this time with cocaine, although the chatter was the same, the physical activity was different. It was not so racy. It was, with the added fentanyl, it kind of gave an opiate effect to the cocaine, which kind of resembles those old speedballs that they used to call, that were double-laced. So that sort of behavior, if you have if you know someone who is dealing with cocaine, you see a huge physical activity when it's really at its highest peak. But we saw just the opposite, lack of initiative, nothing really happening except the chatter, chatter, chatter.
Well, Gail, thank you so very much for your call. And I'm so happy and hopeful for your son as he's in recovery. Thank you for your call. You know, when we talk about the fact that we're seeing more fentanyl in things like cocaine and meth and drugs that up until now we hadn't associated with the opioid epidemic, we're talking about new groups. Julia Lurie was telling us a little earlier, new groups of people suffering from addiction who are now falling prey to fentanyl. And that means that maybe the face of the opioid addiction crisis is changing as well, because African-Americans now, some of whom are addicted to cocaine, may fall prey to these fentanyl-laced batches of cocaine. So joining me now is Dr. Edwin Chapman. He's with us from Washington, and he heads the Medical Home Development Group, a clinic in Northeast Washington that specializes in addiction medicine. And he's, a specialist in internal medicine and addiction medicine as well. Dr. Chapman, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
How much of a change have you been seeing in terms of people you're working with who suffer from addiction, and are they encountering fentanyl more?
Absolutely. The African-American community has really had a protracted history of opioids, primarily heroin, since the Vietnam era, that has been underreported under the radar in the current epidemic. So we've always had a indolent problem with opioids in our community that's just not talked about. But certainly with the advent of the induction of fentanyl into the market, added to the heroin, has really changed that face, so that we had a fairly stable group of patients who were chronic users for 20, 30, 40 years, now having fentanyl introduced into that into the market. Especially over the past 2 years.
You've been in this world treating people for a long time. I mean, I feel like this is the last thing that you and then the people you work with need. I mean, how much is this changing the intensity of the need for assistance?
Well, the overdose rate for opioids, primarily heroin and fentanyl, actually exceeded the murder rate in the district starting in 2016. So in 2016, we had about 231 heroin fentanyl overdoses or opioid overdoses, as opposed to about 85 in the preceding year. So and that number, from my understanding from the medical examiner's office, may have reached 270 or thereabouts in 2017. So it's still going up.
I mean, are we at the point now? It seems as if not only the opioid crisis, but now the adding fentanyl on top of that, like I've never failed to be astonished by how rapidly the crisis has bloomed and evolved. I mean, are we at the point now, Dr. Chapman, where for users of any and all drugs from any and all communities, I mean, talk to me about Washington here, that we ought to be warning everyone to look out for possible fentanyl contamination in what they're using?
Absolutely. I've had a couple of patients who came into the office primarily as heroin users, but also using marijuana. And a fairly stable patient for a number of months started testing positive for fentanyl and marijuana. So she said she was not using fentanyl, that she was not using illicit drugs, and actually fairly consistently had been negative for opioids.
Dr. Chapman, stand by here for just a second. I just have to take a quick break here. We're going to talk a lot more when we get back. We're talking about the new, bigger, broader deadly reach of fentanyl and how it's bringing a whole new group of people into the grip of the opioid epidemic, the opioid crisis in America. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We're talking about how the spread of fentanyl may be transforming the opioid crisis into a narcotics overdose crisis. That's the view from one U.S. attorney in Ohio. And we're exploring whether or not that's true and what effect it may be having in America's ongoing struggle with the opioid addiction crisis. I mean, just consider this number. Fentanyl and its chemical cousins may be responsible for some 25,000 overdose deaths in America in 2017. So we're getting a lot of comments here online. Gabriel Gonzalez sent us this tweet that every year for the past 6 years, Gabriel's gone to one or two funerals directly related to overdose due to fentanyl. Most were not opioid users. This is the new norm. Baltimore Gal says, as a person with chronic pain and one who doesn't expect a change, the description of opioid crisis to narcotics epidemic is welcome because she says many of us rely on strong pain medications to make our days manageable. And on the website, onpointradio.org, we have a comment here from someone who's calling themselves sick of the chit. Addicts are addicts and some are going to continue to take risky drugs. We need a simple, inexpensive test they can use to determine if the drug they are about to take is laced with fentanyl. I'm joined today by Julia Lurie. She covers the opioid epidemic for Mother Jones. By Dr. Edwin Chapman. He heads the Medical Home Development Group, a clinic that specializes in addiction medicine in Washington, D.C. And by Hugh Shannon. He's with the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office in Ohio. Hugh Shannon, I just wanted to ask you a specific question because I'm seeing some numbers. We were talking about new African-American folks suffering from drug addiction who are falling prey to fentanyl in drugs that they didn't expect to see it. I'm seeing that are you seeing that also in Cuyahoga County, that there's been a major increase in African-Americans who've died because of fentanyl?
Oh, for sure.
How much?
It went up probably fourfold since 2015. We had 25 fatalities, and it was 100 last year. What the doctor was saying was true. It wasn't that we never saw a heroin death that involved an African-American, but like he said, it was more the older generation. They had been using since they got back from Vietnam, a lot of veterans, things like that. So it wasn't unheard of, but certainly not to this extent. And because in 2014, we only had 7 fatalities that had anything to do with fentanyl. So from 7 to 25, and now it's at 100. That's a significant jump in a very short period of time. And you had said, you know, you were surprised by the rapidity of the evolution of this crisis. And that's a point that we've tried to make both to our local governments, our state governments, and our federal governments. We've been talking about this crisis since 2012 when we noticed that there was a spike in heroin fatalities. It had gone from 40 to 90 to 107. And we said, something isn't right. Something is vastly different out there. And we tried to rally, you know, our partners in both law enforcement and treatment facilities and our U.S. Attorney's Office to try to get a better handle on it. Because all we see, the medical examiner's office, are the unfortunate end results of these fatalities. And there's a much bigger picture to be had out there.
Right. Dr. Chapman, I mean, pick up on that. Because of the intensity and rapidity of how of this as this epidemic spreads. Are you starting to see there in Washington on the ground and the work you're doing, like that people are changing their attitudes on how to curb the epidemic?
Well, we're really trying to educate the community, both the grassroots community as well as government officials. But we look at this in two ways. Pain is both physical and psychological. And when you look at the economics associated with disparity, any type of disparity, housing, food disparities, or any, all of that creates psychological pain, which in previous years was not really associated with post-traumatic stress disorder. But now that in the African-American community that we've had multiple generations of opioid deaths and cocaine deaths, that it's changed the structure of our families. And you just have to imagine so-called crack babies, or now we're having children born addicted to opiates that we call NAS or neonatal abstinence syndrome, that we're dealing with a multi-generational and children coming into the world addicted and also having a very fragile family structure over multiple generations. So our whole community is impacted by this chronic epidemic for the past 50 years.
Well, you know, we have a lot of people who have some questions and their own stories to share. So the callers have been very patient. Let me just turn to them. Stuart is calling from West Lafayette, Indiana. You're on the air, Stuart.
Yeah. Hi, Meghna. I have been listening to radio programs about this particular subject for a long time, and it very much distresses me that no one has mentioned what I consider the biggest problem. The problem of fentanyl is the problem of advanced technology. Almost all of the fentanyl that we're experiencing here come from custom synthesis houses in China. And you would think that the Chinese government would, you know, be able to address this problem. The problem is that there's something that, if you want to understand why we can't get a handle on this problem, you need to understand the phrase, 100 years of humiliation. This is the view that the Chinese have of the fentanyl problem in the United States. The 100 years of humiliation refers to the opium wars and this type of thing. And the thing is that the Chinese government does not see that their chemical industry should be shut down because, you know, there's an addiction problem in the United States. One other point I want to make, interdiction will not solve this problem because the dose of fentanyl is between 10 and 100 micrograms.
Small, tiny, exactly.
And well, just to give you an idea of how much that is, so like you could have 100 or 100,000 doses, 10,000 to 100,000 doses in the space of the first joint on your middle finger. You're never going to get a handle on that particular. That kind of smuggling problem is not going to be solved. But I don't know how it's going. There's going to be some kind of diplomatic effort to try to get the Chinese government to change their mind.
Stuart, I'm going to just take it back from you because I want to hear what Julia Lurie has to say about this, but I very much appreciate your call because I did want to talk about, you know, when we're talking about multifaceted ways to attack this problem, one of those facets has to be getting at the source of the fentanyl. So I appreciate your call. Julia Lurie, what do you have to say about, you know, he's looking at China and saying the Chinese government isn't doing enough to curb the very source of these synthetic opioids?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge problem. And you're totally right that that fentanyl is predominantly coming from China. This is going to be a really, really tough problem to solve because it's not like it's, you know, a handful of big factories that are producing this. This is coming from tons and tons of small scale fentanyl producers, like you said, in labs. This is a very cheap and easy drug to make. And so when you have a very potent drug that you can ship very easily in the mail, that's how most fentanyl is getting here, and you have the dark web where people can order online fentanyl and analogs of fentanyl very easily, then you have this recipe for lots and lots of small-scale actors rather than, you know, one big organization that you can take down.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to be a continuing challenge here.
Like, well, let me just ask you, can I just ask a quick question about, about this? Because, I mean, I'm thinking about Stuart's bigger point that the United States can try to do certain things about stopping fentanyl and its analogs at its source, right? I mean, I'm seeing that the State Department has tried to do some work with China and with the DEA to outlaw new varieties as they crop up, and that the DEA even temporarily changed fentanyl analogs to Schedule I narcotics. But for as long as there isn't a full crackdown in the countries, you know, China specifically, where the analogs are being created initially, what good is any of this going to do?
It's a good question. And frankly, I don't really know the answer. I mean, there have been some diplomatic efforts. The Chinese government is saying that it's working on this. But frankly, regulation has never exactly been a strong suit in a lot of Chinese products. And also, B, this is happening all over the place.
Right.
And so I think the combination of those two things means that, diplomatic efforts are only going to go so far.
Well, let's take another call here. Jeff is calling from Sarasota, Florida. You're on the air, Jeff.
Hello, Magna. Love your show. I listen all the time. First and foremost, I just want to say that there is hope and there is a solution. 12 years ago, I was homeless due to my addiction, and I did everything. And I'm a veteran also, and I'll be eternally grateful for the VA hospital in Tampa, Florida, the James A. Haley Hospital, because they took me in and they showed me a new way to live. And to stay clean, what I do is I do it a day at a time, and I devote my life to helping other addicts like me that are deemed hopeless. So there is hope. The main thing that I see in my experience here, it's horrible. I've had two close friends die from fentanyl overdoses here in Bradenton and Sarasota in the last year. And what I see, there has to be a comprehensive change in the attitude, especially among the frontline responders, the people in the ERs. They're pumping them in, and I understand they get overwhelmed because they see so many people, and they come back, and they come back,
mm-hmm.
and they get an attitude. But what they administer Narcan, which immediately reverses the effects of the overdose, but it within 20 minutes sends the addicts back into full-blown withdrawal.
Yeah.
And then they boot them out the door.
Jeff, can I just take your call back for here for a second, because I want to turn what you have to say to our guests, but... Jeff, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Chapman, I mean, speak to what he's saying, that again, you can bring someone back from the brink with Narcan, but if there isn't any subsequent assistance for those suffering from these addictions, that it's like a revolving door.
So about 3 years ago, Yale did a study on exactly what he was talking about, and they introduced buprenorphine, or medication-assisted treatment, in the emergency room. So the treatment started in the emergency room, and they found that they got an 80% retention rate after 1 week, or follow-up appointment after 1 week, as opposed to doing exactly what he described, giving Narcan, giving the patient a referral or paper referral to go someplace later on, which resulted in only 38% compliance. So treatment should start in the emergency room, and that's where you actually want to stop the revolving door.
Yeah.
The other problem, the big problem, is the fact that in this country we've treated opioid addiction and other addictions as a moral failing as opposed to a disease. France and Portugal 20 years ago started using medication-assisted treatment. They went in the very opposite direction that we went in, and they have virtually destroyed the heroin market in those countries, and that's through their socialized model. And I think someone earlier talked about the government really stepping in and formally taking over this whole process.
Yeah. You know, just a quick mention, we should mention that the Trump administration has put forth a plan, its plan to help combat the opioid addiction crisis. Seeing how that works and if it works is a conversation for another day. But Hugh Shannon, I keep coming back to sort of where we started this conversation with you and Julia and Dr. Chapman, and that is because we are seeing fentanyl in new places, like in cocaine, in meth. I mean, Dr. Chapman was even saying that, you know, he was working with a young woman who smokes marijuana but also had evidence of fentanyl in her system. I mean, I hope this doesn't sound like too extreme a question, but if it's getting to be more places, I mean, should just about everyone have a dose of Narcan in their house just in case?
Well, it's not a bad, it's not a bad idea. We've got it, obviously, all over our office. The people who work in the labs have it. Our investigators who go to death scenes have it in their kits. Our police departments have it now. It's an unfortunate necessity at this point because it's so dangerous. And, you know, we've been talking about fentanyl and all the damage that it's done, but there are worse drugs out there that we are seeing on the street. Carfentanil, which is used to put down elephants and rhinos in zoos so that they can have medical treatment, is on the street, and it is on the rise, and that's about 10,000 times more powerful than morphine, whereas fentanyl is only, you know, 1,000 times. So, I mean, we're talking about extremely powerful drugs that are being encountered now by first responders.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Hugh Shannon is administrator in the Cuyahoga County Medical Examiner's Office, speaking to us today from Cleveland, Ohio. Hugh Shannon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Edwin Chapman, he heads the Medical Home Development Group, a clinic in Northeast Washington specializing in addiction medicine. Dr. Chapman, thank you so much for your time, your thought, and your perspective.
Thank you.
And Julia Lurie, reporter at Mother Jones, covering the opioid epidemic. We have a link to her piece headlined, America's Fentanyl Problem is Reaching a Whole New Group of Users. Definitely check it out. The link is at onpointradio.org. Julia, thank you so much.
Thank you, Magda.
And thank you to all our callers and the folks who sent us comments. This is definitely an epidemic and a crisis that's touched so many people. I appreciate your perspective and your stories. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.